It's Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news. I'm in the studio here at 1021 East Broad Street with Simone Morgan, the co-chair of the Democratic Socialists of Central Ohio, DISCO, but also a member, are you not, of the National Executive Committee, the Political Committee of Democratic Socialists of America.
Yes, the National Political Committee, yes.
And as a member, you, as listeners, need to know that the Democratic Socialist, safe to say you're the largest Democratic Socialist organization in the United States?
Yes, yes, and we've been actually growing, and a lot of chapters are developing all over the country. We've been getting a lot of new organizing groups.
Is that in any way related to the fact that we have a self-proclaimed Democratic Socialist running in the Democratic primaries? And, of course, we speak of Bernie Sanders.
It may be. I mean, obviously, he's bringing attention to socialism and, you know, sparking interest. A lot of it also just has to do with newer organizational priorities and more of an active recruitment. But it is partly a millennial reaction to Sanders.
Part of it, part of the whole equation seems to be the mainstream corporate capitalist press doesn't like to deal with the issue that he's calling himself a Democratic Socialist. And I was actually reading a column in the New York Times the other day, and the guy was going, oh, you should just call him a liberal, because that's what he is. But that's not what Democratic Socialism, right? There's a distinction between liberalism and Democratic Socialism, is there not?
Yeah, liberalism is simply tries to ameliorate some of the worst effects of capitalism, to allow, you know, more of a social safety net, to perhaps a more progressive tax, things of that nature. Whereas democratic socialism ultimately is hoping to basically extend democracy, assuming we have it, from the political into the economic sphere, to transfer control of the means of production to workers.
So would it be safe to say that democratic socialism is the democratization of the means of production and distribution?
Yes, yeah.
So you actually want ordinary people in the community, workers, so-called stakeholders, to have say over what the, you know, the commanding heights, the giant corporations do?
Ultimately, yes. Ultimately, we would like to see more of that taken over. We understand that this is a difficult and a long, you know, process, and it won't be easy, but that's our ultimate aim, to see more worker control and an end to a capitalist system.
Now, one of the positions of DSA, and before that, DSOC, Democratic Socialist Organizing Committee, organizing to create a group like DSA, one of their positions was to run openly Democratic Socialist for offices like the president. And I was involved in the discussion back in 1980 when Michael Harrington was going to run. And instead, Ted Kennedy ran, and the DSA backed him, and he actually used the term social democratic, right, which I would argue is almost ideologically in between liberalism and democratic socialism. But why did it take so long, do you think, to get open socialists to run like this for president in the United States?
Well, it certainly was never made easy. The United States has a specific, you know, between the nature of the parties, that they are simply lines on a ballot and are not, don't really expect, you know, adherence to a particular set of ideas, and the nature and also the fact that we have a winner-take-all system. We don't have a real. We don't have a parliamentary system. It becomes much more difficult. There are very few fusion states where you can run on several different lines. I think that at a certain point, there was a decision made to work within what Harrington called the left wing of the Democratic Party, or the left wing of the possible. But in recent years, there's been more dissatisfaction with it, and the current strategy document, which gets revised every 10 or 15 years, and is under discussion now and will be voted on at the next convention in a few weeks, is looking more toward eventual running as candidates. But I think a lot of that still has to be worked out.
All right. And for the record, in this Bob Fitrage is talking with Simone Morgan, the co-chair of the Democratic Socialists of Central Ohio. I ran as a explicit Democratic Socialist in 1992 in the Democratic Party against John Kasich. In fact, I put the fist in the rose, the symbol of international democratic socialism, on my campaign signs. And a lot of people want to know if I was endorsing Miraflora. So if we were in Canada, Western Europe, Scandinavia, Japan, anywhere else in the major democracies, people would have known immediately I was a democratic socialist. Exactly. Here in the United States, they thought maybe I was backing Miraflora.
That's funny.
Is there a problem with what we call American exceptionalism, with educating the American voters to, in fact, a hidden legacy? A point we had like 19 or so mayors in Ohio prior to World War I that were Democratic Socialists. We had 3 people on the city council in Columbus in 1913, 4 on the school board. What is happening where people aren't really being taught about this third option?
Well, and by the way, I don't know if that was in the entire thing, but shortly after those socialists were elected, that's when the city decided to switch to a district.
Yeah, I think my thought is it had a lot to do with it.
A lot to do with it, yeah.
Right, go at large, keep. And of course, really, there's some who argue the biggest reason we don't have socialism as a third party of some scope in the U.S. was the massive repression of the left, not just the Democratic Socialists, but communists, anarchists,
left.
And the shutting down of their presses, the Sedition Act. I mean, Eugene Victor Debs went to jail for 10 years for saying that rich people declare war and poor and working people fight and die. Was that a problem as well?
I'm sure. I mean, that was just the first Red Scare, around 1920, a little earlier than that. Sure. I mean, the elites were fighting back at an early stage, and they certainly did repress it. Even though a lot of socialists, communists managed to insert eventually ideas that FDR used to save capitalism from itself, like Social Security.
Yeah, many argue that FDR's platform was Debs's 1908 platform. It was almost identical.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question about it that there was repression. And then that was followed again by the second Red Scare in the 50s, where socialism was equated with a statist regime in Russia. There's no doubt about it that's been a problem. And people have been... There is very little good political education in the United States. A lot of these things are never mentioned. Socialism has a very long history in the United States. A lot of people trace it back to intentional communities and things in the earlier 1800s. And then, of course, the arrival of a lot of Marxists and Germans, after the 1848. Events and later on, and they brought a lot of these ideas here. But yes, as these things started to gain popularity, the 1% of its time struck back hard. There was a lot of repression.
New Harmony, Indiana,
that's right.
Zorro, Ohio, the seven Amandas, little Amandas in Iowa, which eventually ended up being a corporation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're very successful. We'd probably call them market socialists, but, you know, they were Christian socialists who were quite successful economically. And that history seems to be lost as well.
Oh, at that time, socialism was considered the political expression of Christianity. And remember, it was a Christian socialist minister who wrote the Pledge of Allegiance.
Uh-huh.
Francis Bellamy.
Yeah, follower of, he was
He was related to Edward Bellamy, who wrote Looking Backward, yeah.
Right. So in the 1930s, Michael Harrington, one of the founders, probably the key founder of DSA and DSOC before it, argued that part of the reason socialism didn't flourish in the 30s is a large wing actually broke off and went into the New Deal, arguing that the New Deal was sort of a de facto liberal labor party, social democratic, and that there was a tremendous impulse towards doing things for workers, the Wagner Act, Social Security, and that there was no real chance to have a outside party when many of the immediate programs of the Socialist Party were being inactive.
Mm-hmm.
Not the long-term democratization of the large corporations, but a lot of the reform programs.
That's right. Right. They were alleviating the worst aspects of capitalism. It really was more liberal than anything else, certainly.
So did socialist immediate programs save corporate capitalism?
Well, I've always said that we seem to be saving capitalism from itself. You know, it's an unstable system that periodically gets into crises, most recently in 2008. And yes, a lot of...
When they want to deregulate, you have Glass-Steagall, you're watching the big casino banks, and then they repeal that, and we immediately get into another downturn.
That's right. You know, and unfortunately, human greed is It's a continuing presence, of course.
And in 1960, the Socialist Party essentially fused into the Democratic Party, realignment strategy, trying to move the party in a progressive way.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Harrington himself was the architect.
That's right.
Of the war on poverty.
That's right.
And that seemed to be going forward, but Democratic socialism is more than economics, right? I mean, what blew that coalition apart was the Vietnam War. Is it safe to say that democratic socialist in America has also been a anti-war party or a peace party?
I think generally that's where most of the, I've never been aware of any strong hawk element, you know, in democratic socialism.
I mean, perhaps the only war that a majority backed was World War II. I mean, they were the opposition to World War I. They were the opposition in many ways to the Vietnam War.
Yes.
Most of them obviously opposed the attack on Iraq and helped organize demonstrations.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were splits at times when factions that wanted to, make more of an issue of anti-communism and more of an issue in terms of the, you know, American defense strategy. You know, yeah, there were some splits, but basically it's always been an anti-war party. And they've also moved away pretty decisively from the idea of assuming that they can work within the Democratic Party to push it left. The view of it now is really more that there are some tactical reasons why you might sometimes support a Democrat, but that it's not an overriding strategy.
Well, and one of those reasons may have been the country's dramatic shift to the right by the Republicans.
Exactly.
And the fact that Democratic Leadership Council really formed after 84, and what they saw as the Mondale debacle, which DSA backed Mondale as a labor-endorsed candidate. But the argument is Bill Clinton, for the most part, appeared to have been a free trade, neoliberal, corporate, capitalist candidate.
Absolutely. Totally let's put it this way, an African American friendly face on a corporate agenda. And it's just amazing to me how popular he still is with those groups.
You know, I can't figure out. I just wrote a article with Harvey Wasserman, and you're listening to WCRS, your community radio, 98.3, 102.1. I'm in the studio with Simone Morgan, the co-chair of the Democratic Socialist of Central Ohio and a member of their National Political Central Committee. But if you go back and look at the continued rise of the prison industrial complex, and particularly federal crimes that put, you know, record number of black men in jail, that occurred under Bill Clinton.
That's
so I've
right.
never been able to figure out how is he the black president when he essentially bought into Nixon and Reagan's war on drugs, which really disproportionately harmed African-Americans.
Absolutely. That, and also the so-called welfare reform. That I find that baffling. I can't understand. I mean, yes, he was, unlike most white politicians, he was comfortable with blacks, you know, and didn't seem to be dissing them just to talk to them. But his programs were pure corporate, and they had a terrible effect. You know, between the welfare reform, the crime bill, NAFTA, removing some sort of a ladder of decent jobs, you know. Yeah, I do not understand it. I still do not understand it.
Now, you think there'll be any tension in DSA as Hillary Clinton runs strongly to the left and has appeared to reverse some of her positions on tar sands and other things? Will there be any discussion, well, now that she's adopted these positions, maybe we shouldn't support Bernie Sanders, or will you be harming Hillary if Bernie does too well, or is this the moment for democratic socialism and the organization's going to push as hard as they can to get as many votes and essentially destroy American exceptionalism? And that exceptionalism, we were the only country that doesn't have a debate, including democratic socialism.
Yeah. Oh, I would doubt that that would. I mean, I think most people have a basic suspicion that, you know, that they, sure, Hillary will say things. The question is, does anybody believe her? You know, obviously, this is the way the drift is going, and she feels she has to make these little baby steps, you know, and some of these really questionable approaches that are very limited, which, frankly, I think most of us expect her to drop them if she ever gets in. They'll be dropped in a heartbeat. It's she's got too much history and too much connection to Wall Street. I'm sure that they're going to be continuing to support Bernie to the extent possible, and also because, as he says, we need to build a movement, and that's what we would like to do.
Yeah, there's one group of people, you'll see some of the writing saying that it really is about movement building, that there's no way the corporate capitalist structure is ever going to let Bernie Sanders win.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Well, it's a less. You do hear that. It's the more pessimistic view, and I don't think anybody. We're basically keeping our options open. We want to work for him as much as we can to bring as many people to democratic socialism as we can. Whether the corporations, sure, we suspect that they'll do everything they can. After all, look at the mouthpiece that the New York Times has been, and they've gotten lots of pushback from reader comments, the way they've kind of, you know, downplayed and done everything they can to make him look unimportant.
And they've probably covered him more than anybody. But you're saying they've covered him from a certain perspective.
Yeah.
Would you regard that as unfair?
Yeah, but me and a lot of other people, yeah, I mean, it's basically a dismissive approach. And especially when they first...
Here he is, he's doing good, he can't win.
Right, that, and also everything initially was covered as...
Oh, we got 10 minutes to go. That's just producer's sign.
Oh, things were covered initially, not... He's getting all these huge crowds, and people are very excited. But how will this affect Hillary?
Huge, massive crowd. I mean, yeah. How big have these crowds been? 10,000, 30,000?
Especially in the West Coast, a lot of them have been 20,000, 30,000, yes.
Yes. So in you had contrasts where Hillary was accused of paying people.
Wouldn't
giving
surprise
away
me.
Tickets, essentially giving away tickets to events to get people there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's no question about that.
But the way it's set up, can Bernie build a movement, and will this mean a new movement for DSA?
I would say that he can't, and he has said this, he can't build it alone. For one thing, even if we manage to get him the nomination, he's got to deal with the Congress. There need to be people who would actually carry out his, you know, his laws and his proposals. But it will not affect us, you know, whether we think he can win or not. We will be doing everything we can to build a movement and let people know what it means and plug that hole in American consciousness. We do not have good history teaching, and we tend to forget everything. It ain't for nothing that Gore Vidal called us the United States of Amnesia. We've forgotten everything we've learned.
And how did these millennials, these younger people who seem to be the base of this movement, how do they suddenly become... receptive to democratic socialism. Have you guys thought about that, analyzed that?
Absolutely. You know, it's because they are experiencing these things firsthand. They can't, college has increased way beyond inflation. Mm-hmm. They don't have money to pay. They graduate with huge debts. It's the first generation that's going to do worse than their parents. They're living it, and so what he says
resonates. Well, there's really no
career
path for them, right? You're coming out, and then you're going to have to wait 5, 10, 15, 20 years, for a job in some case.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It resonates because it's their life. They see what's happening.
What about some of the justice movements, like Fight for 15? Is that... helped the rise of democratic socialism?
Well, any kind of fight for, improved wages and, a better living can't hurt. It's just that it's not sufficient. It's basically still asking for things from capitalists rather than taking over the actual means of production ourselves.
What could a democratic socialist president do if Bernie was elected? Are there concrete things he can do?
That's a hard question. He can use executive decision-making power to perhaps...
Raise minimum wage for federal workers?
Yeah. Those are the sort of things that he could do, yeah. I think he would be very constrained if he did not have enough support from Congress. You know, he'd be in the same position that Obama has been, except more so.
Except Obama has moved, in a direction, the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Well, that's something you wouldn't have to worry about with Bernie. He's been against them
so
from the
beginning.
So
he's actually, Obama being restrained, one of the areas they've allowed him to move is to the right, the free trade neoliberalism, but not to the left.
Right.
I've written about this in academic as well as popular articles. The Republicans and many of the conservatives like to call Obama a socialist. I argued, he's wish that were the truth. He's not even good enough to be called Eisenhower.
Yeah.
A man with a 91% tax rate for the 1%.
That's right.
But by calling Obama a socialist, aren't they attempting to actually end real debate over what democratic socialism would look like and how we could, in fact, democratize the corporations. By saying that Obama's a socialist, I mean, it's fairly ridiculous. Essentially, you're trying to equate a corporate capitalist, granted one who would regulate them and attempt to set up safety nets, with socialism. So for the record, is Obama a socialist?
Heck no. No. He
is he a democratic socialist born in Kenya?
He is basically probably would be considered an Eisenhower moderate in any other period. I mean,
and again, I would argue on certain questions of infrastructure building and taxes, not as good as Eisenhower.
That's right. Oh, yeah. I mean, some of it has to do with the period in which Eisenhower was elected, when some of these more strongly socialist-inspired, consensus was more active, and Eisenhower may have been somewhat constrained by that.
But in the aftermath of the New Deal?
That's right. That's right. This, you know, let things... It defined the... the mood at that time and the feelings. But since then, especially, since the 1% took the Powell memo to heart and, started funding think tanks and started, influencing the American dialogue, this has really changed the consciousness, what is considered received wisdom in this time.
And what do you mean by received wisdom?
Well, this sort of gets into Gramsci about the hegemony. It's what people think is natural, the way things should be, the way things will normally come out, and that capitalist ownership of means of production is a normal, natural
thing.
So
who controls that narrative? Who controls those symbols? Who's able to close off dialogue and just simply say, everyone knows that this is true.
A lot of it is the 1% and their influence in their think tanks and their the propaganda they put out. And even a paper that gets accused as being liberal, the New York Times, is actually a pretty conservative paper and mouthpiece for those views.
For transnational corporate capitalism?
Absolutely.
And it struck me odd the other day when Bernie was talking about democratic socialism. Socialism that all of the other people, Jim Webb has since dropped out, and so has Lincoln Chafee. But all of them gravitated to Adam Smith entrepreneurial capitalism,
right.
Small businesses to justify capitalism. None of them said corporate capitalism. None of them said the dominant entity, transnational. You know, these behemoths that stalk the earth, all of them, kind of went back to the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is what they always say because, it reads well and it's appealing to people. But that's a tiny proportion. And to a certain extent, small businessmen are being screwed by big multinationals and the Chamber of Commerce.
So you're not a DSA member? You're not opposed to entrepreneurial capitalism?
No, of course not. In the sense that... people should have the ability, if they would like to open a business and, serve the community, we would like and prefer to see them as worker-owned cooperatives.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we hope to see. But we're not going to stomp out efforts of people to try to serve the community. It's a question of basically who is controlling the economy.
All right. You've heard that from Simone Morgan, the co-chair of the Democratic Socialist of Central Ohio. Is there a website, some contact place where listeners can get a hold of you?
Check out
DSA online.
Well, actually, yes. What they should just do is go to dsausa.org and you can link to our website.
One more time.
DSAUSA, that's all one word, .org. www, of course.
All right. Thanks a lot, Simone Morgan, for being on The Other Side of the News.